My name is Dirk Sauber, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dirk.
Hey, everybody. It's good.
Lots and lots and lots. And oh,
thank you. It's good to be here sober today. I want to thank Mike and Mike for keeping in contact with me. The last few months. So it's been a real pleasure talking to them. And it's been a real pleasure hanging around you guys in this conference the last 24 hours or so. Enjoyed the speakers. Clear this up. Gene and that spoke last night at 8 and Karen that spoke at 10 this morning and myself are all members of the Fellowship Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Huntsville, Alabama. And we want to invite you, I should say, to our group in Huntsville. We think it's the best group in AA. We have 4 meetings a day, every day. So we're a big group, and we see a lot of different kinds of people there. And we must be doing something right, because in the time, it's not always been my home group, but I've always gone to meetings there. And since the time I've started going, our membership has probably quadrupled, if I had to pick a number. So we must be doing something right there. So we want to invite you folks to Huntsville, Alabama, to the Fellowship Group of Alcoholics Anonymous sometime. You'll hear me say that I'm glad to be here sober every time I introduce myself at a meeting. And I do that for a reason. I do that to tell myself that I sure am appreciative of God's grace in my life. I am so happy that you folks let me hang around long enough to where I could finally accept His love and His grace that had always been there for me. You know, I don't know if we're chosen or not. I think that everybody in this world has the same grace that I have. For some reason or another, with your guys' help and by reaching a complete and total surrender to my disease of alcoholism, I finally was able to accept His grace and to do what you guys talk about. I love what you have on the front of your little flyer here that says the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. If that's not only a tremendous fact, that is a wonderful fact. And it is a truism. It is a spiritual axiom or self-evident truth that if I will try my best to surrender my disease and to practice these principles and to work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, that there is a solution to my problem, which is my disease of alcoholism. So doggone, I'm a pretty enthusiastic member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am so glad to be able to be a living, breathing human being and participate in this deal. It is such a wonderful, wonderful deal. I have always lived a lie. I have not been a liar, particularly. My whole life was a lie. Now, sometimes I did have to tell a few lies and stuff, but my whole being was a lie, because from my very first memory, this is what I recall. I'm supposed to think this way, and I'm supposed to feel this way, and I'm supposed to say these things. And I never felt this way. And I never believed what was said. And on top of all that, I never felt like I fit in to wherever I was. And because of that, I was never comfortable. No matter where I was, I wanted to be somewhere else. And almost all of us talk about that. And I think that's what makes it so true, is that for whatever reason, I'm different. I am different because not of what you do and what you say, but how I react to what you do and what you say, or what I perceive. The reason I'm different is I perceive myself as being different. Now, fortunately, I've been wrong. I've been wrong about almost everything that I thought I was right about. A guy in Chicago, a guy named Frank, talks about something that I really identify with. He says that he was never happy, he never was comfortable, and never felt like he had had enough of anything. And gosh, when I heard that for the first time, I said, God, I know exactly how he feels. and I identified with him immediately. I still have never laid eyes on this man, but he made a huge impression upon me, and he made me help to make me one of you by just saying those few basic, simple words. I think I've always been looking for a wholeness, and I never knew where it was. I looked everywhere for wholeness. I looked for it in school and trying to strive and to excel in that. I looked for it in sports and trying to excel in that. I tried to get attention everywhere. I tried to do what my mother and my father wanted me to do. Occasionally, I tried to do what my teachers in school wanted me to do. It never occurred to me that that wholeness was available inside here. It never dawned on me that that's where it was. I always thought that my problem, if I could take care of things on the outside, things on the inside would be better. And I was wrong about that. Thank God I was wrong about that. I stay tired a lot. I burn up a lot of energy. And one reason I burn up a lot of energy is because I never... If you looked at me on the outside, like I was just talking about, I looked like I had it together. I was always one of those that looked like I was going to do very, very well in life. If you looked at me at school, if you looked at me at home, if you looked at me at other places that when I was working, you would say, that guy's going to do real well. He's going to be all right. And there was things going on inside of me that I couldn't explain to you until I read something in the last chapter of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had that to varying degrees as my drinking progressed. But my alcoholism caused me to always experience those things when things didn't go my way. There were the terror, the bewilderment, the frustration, and the despair. And the book talks about something right before that epitomizes the way I felt, and that is the loneliness. I could be in a room full of people 100 times this big, and I felt so alone. And I didn't know what was missing. So I struggled around through life and pretended like everything was okay and stayed confused and stayed bewildered and was full of despair, and I was scared. But gosh, I was lonely. I was so lonely. And I don't guess I was ever alone. I don't recall ever being alone. I haven't mentioned anything about drinking. I didn't know how to get along with people way before I knew anything about alcohol. But I tell you, I didn't take to alcohol initially. I wasn't one of those people that as soon as I had that drink of alcohol that, my gosh, this is the answer to my problems. It didn't do anything for me. But see, I was still in a fantasy world. What worked for me to some degree or another, depending on what the situation was, is since I never liked being where I was at any one moment and never could live in that moment, I would be here physically, but my mind would be off somewhere else. And it would be a pretty neat place. I'd be off in a lot of neat places. And that's pretty sad, you know, because I missed a lot of years of living life. Because you can't live life, or I couldn't live life, when I was addicted to that type of thinking, where I was always somewhere in the past, or I was always somewhere in the future, and I was never right here, like I am today. Right now, right this moment, I'm with a bunch of people that are like me, and I'm very, very happy, and I'm very comfortable, and I feel like you folks are not only enough, you're more than enough, because of what you gave me that I wasn't even looking for. So, when I did get enough practice drinking, where I could keep that stuff down, something magical did happen. It finally hit me one time when I was drinking some vodka, best I can recall, with some of my high school buddies, and all of a sudden I felt different. I started to see things differently. I said, man, this place isn't so bad. These guys aren't so bad. I'm kind of happy right here. I think I can go talk to that girl. You know, I've been wanting to talk to her 3-4 years now. And I think I might be able to go talk to her, or at least call her on the phone. It gave me courage. It filled me. It gave me a feeling of wholeness. Tom Brady talks about that a lot, and he really has helped me in his writings and being around him when he speaks and stuff. And I've been searching for that wholeness, and by gosh, I found it. That was around, I'd say, close to 20, when I really sought that wholeness through alcohol. I sought it through other substances, so I want you to know that I'm one of those people that I'll take anything and put it in my body if it'll change the way I feel. But I'm an alcoholic, and boy, I'm what you call a real alcoholic, because once I figured out what that alcohol would do for me, there was no price too dear to pay to get that. Now, I happen to be one of those. I was disciplined in a lot of areas in my life. I happened, for some reason or another, I don't know if it was cause of, I don't know why it was, but I could take care of school, I could take care of work, and then when that stuff was taken care of, I could take care of my financial obligations most of the time. But when that stuff was taken care of, it was time to change. And it was time to change by drinking that alcohol. So because of that, even though I was a consistent user of alcohol, I really didn't have any ill effects from alcohol for a long time. It was really my around 30. My late 20s, early 30s was when alcohol really started to affect what was happening to me as far as on the outside. Like I've been telling you, on the inside, it really affected me. Because I was able to deal with people. I could deal with life on life's terms when I was drinking alcohol, when I knew I was going to be drinking alcohol. I met this lady that I'm married to now, in the late 70s, and we started this relationship that has been a wonderful relationship in a lot of ways. In a lot of ways, it's been the most horrible, terrifying relationship you can possibly imagine because of my alcoholism. We decided in 1979, I guess it was, to get married. And you would have looked at us and you said, that couple is going to do real well, because this lady had a great career going. She's still involved in that career. Mine was starting to get going. Neither one of us had any children. We decided not to have children, which has been the right decision for us. So you could have looked at us either individually or together as a couple, or at work, and you say, those people are going to do real well. And we were able to live the life that people dream about living, that we could do whatever we wanted to do whenever we wanted to do it, as long as we'd show up to work and take care of those basic responsibilities. And I rocked along that way all my life. I do recall during my 20s that something was wrong. Something was wrong with me, and I wasn't sure what it was. What I know today the problem is that I had this illusion of a separation from God. And the reason I had that illusion is because I was God. I had, for whatever reason, had always chosen to play that role, to make my own decisions. The selfishness and the self-centeredness that the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about describes me to a T. So, of course, I'm going to be separate from a God if I choose to play that role. I don't have any choice. So I knew something, but I never was really comfortable, you know. I really was always ill at ease about... I'd be sitting in a meeting at work, and it'd be 6 to 10 men and women all dressed up, you know, shirt and ties, having a meeting. And I'd be sitting around going, if these people knew that They are normal adults carrying on a business, earning their paycheck, and I'm sitting there feeling like an 8-year-old kid, not wanting to be there, having absolutely no interest in what they're saying, scared to death, and also ridicule them in my mind. So I was always uncomfortable around these people. I never did seem to quite measure up to them, and I felt like maybe they were 20 or 30 years a little more mature than me, and I was probably pretty close to being right, it turns out. So Gil and I got married in 1980. Gosh, we had a good time. We got to drink and party. At the time, I guess you want to describe my drinking, I was a heavy drinker. On weekends, I'd get on some pretty good tears. Most time, I could show up to work on Monday, not 100% of the time by any means. Sometimes I didn't make it all the way through Friday, but I had a pretty good reputation at work. I had a pretty good reputation of doing a good job, and I had a saying that I used, and it was kind of a joke back then, get away with it. You know, I was hell when I was well, but I was sick a lot. And that seemed to work out. You know, took care of the job for the most part. And they pretty much would leave you alone at that time. In the few years after Gil and I got married, we bought us a little home down in the nice part of Huntsville. Gosh, things were going real well. I got a promotion, so finally I'd gotten up to what was a success, I guess, for me in the occupation that I'm involved in. And as a result of this promotion, I went to work for this office where there happened to be some people that I already knew, and there were some new people came in, and we had this really pretty exciting project that we were working on, and it was a stimulating deal. It was something that I felt that I was doing something worthwhile, you know, being new in it. I was excited about it, and we had this little crew of men and women that seemed to get along real well, and it was a pretty neat situation. And if you would have looked at me at that time in the early 1984, things really looked good. Things really looked good on the outside. We had a little bit of a quiet time back then, and it was Secretary's Week in 1984, and me and a buddy of mine that had come into the team decided to take our administrative person out to a lunch one day. And we asked her if she'd like to do that, and she said yeah, and we said, okay, you name the place, and she did. So the three of us went out and had a lunch, normal thing to do back then in 1984. We had a sandwich, and we had a few drinks. And we decided just to take the afternoon off. This kind of shows you how I'm different. First, is they both called in. I didn't call in. You know, that was my attitude. Hell with it, I ain't calling in. I'm with them. I've been working hard. I deserve this. And that's the way I looked at life. So anyway, we had had a nice afternoon of drinking, visiting, and it came time to take them back to their work. Excuse me, back to work where their cars were, and I was driving, and I was driving this neat little red Audi car, this really yuppie type deal, and what I was unwilling to admit for a long time is I had been drinking very heavily that weekend. But prior to that, this was a Monday, and I had drank real heavy that weekend. On the way back on the arsenal where we worked, I had a car accident. In that car accident, I hit a car head on. And in that car accident, the lady that was riding with us was killed. And the friend that was riding in the back was hurt. And the lady that I hit was hurt pretty bad. And I was hurt very seriously. So you're looking at a guy who seemed to have everything together, no consequences as a result of any behavior or any drinking on my part, never any arrest, never any consequences at work or at home because of that, to all of a sudden his life has completely turned around. Because when they did a blood alcohol test on me, I was above the limit. And you're looking at a guy here who is banged up real bad in a wheelchair, busted all up, who was indicted in federal court for negligent homicide, who had civil suits filed against him by everybody involved in that accident, who eventually was going to get his security clearance pulled, so that meant he could not work that job he was working. And you're looking at a guy who didn't know what in the world to do with that or how to live with that. I talked about the terror, the bewilderment, and the frustration, and the despair, and the self-pity and the loathing as a result of my guilt and my remorse and my inability to deal with that situation was just completely overwhelming. And I did what every alcoholic does. Didn't know what I was doing, but I sought comfort in the one thing that I knew would give me comfort, because I could not handle that situation. I could not deal with that. The one thing that could help me deal with that and make me feel that I could buy into what people were trying to tell me, that was just an accident, that could just happen to anybody, that you need to take care of this business and move on with your life. The only thing that could help me do that is drinking. So once I was physically able to, I knew exactly what could help me out with that. So, you know, alcoholism is not something, in my experience, it is not something where I had a few drinks and I got a few DUIs and I had a little bit of trouble and I decided I need to straighten up my life. Because that began a series of, a period of time, I should say, of approximately 3 years of just horrible, destructive alcoholism. I used to talk about that 3 years a lot, not long after I got sober. And I don't know why, because I didn't remember much of it. I still don't remember much of it. My wife has filled in some gaps for me. So I guess maybe that's where I got the information. I really don't know. You know, I decided to plead guilty to that after I accepted the responsibility for it, and I didn't accept the responsibility for it, but I knew that I'd probably do better if because my record was clean, if I just kind of plead guilty to a lesser charge and pretty much do a plea bargain deal. And that's what I did. Went down to federal court in Birmingham, Alabama, and pled guilty involuntary manslaughter, not knowing exactly what was going to happen, but I had these two lawyers from Huntsville that were well-known lawyers, and they knew the federal judge that I have to be going before. And like I say, my record was clean. My employers backed me up. My wife stuck with me. My friends stuck with me. And I can remember, you're talking about being scared. I can remember, I'd never been in federal court in my life. I'd never been in any court. I was standing up there and sat, well, I was on the witness stand for about an hour, seemed like about a year. And because the family of the lady that I killed was there. And that's probably one of the longest hours I've ever spent in my life. But I tell you what happened. There's another deal of dirt coming out of it smelling like a rose. Because what he did, the judge did, he sentenced me to 5 years in federal penitentiary. He gave me the maximum fine, and he gave me 250 hours of community service, and I never served one day in jail. I walked away from that, essentially no change. Figure out what kind of community service you're going to be. And I remember driving back from Birmingham to Huntsville, approximately 100 miles, and you know, I didn't drink on that trip because there's some people following us and some people with us. But that evening, I was sitting in my driveway, and I do remember this evening in February of 1985. I said, now what are you going to do, boy? What's going to happen now? Because, see, people were saying, they were congratulating me. You can get on with your life now. You can move on. And I said, how am I going to do that? And I tell you how I did that. I hit the bottle. I hit it good. And that began a period of about 2 years, like I say, where the only way I could get any peace or any rest or any relief was through the bottle. And I never once thought about what's this doing to my wife, what's this doing to my family. All I thought about was me. I was so wrapped up in me and to my self-pity that I couldn't see my way. I couldn't see anything. 1987, I wound up going to work one Saturday, working some overtime. Got into the bottle after I got home, and I couldn't get out of it. It happened several times before. One time in particular where I wound up on Monday morning going in the hospital instead of going to work to get dried out and get through the DTs and stuff, because my alcoholism had really advanced. There wasn't anything fun about my drinking, guys. There wasn't a bit of thing, nothing fun about it. But I got into that bottle one weekend, and I just could not get out. And I started, I just didn't go to work. I just quit. I just shut down. I did pretty much a 28-day drinking program in my home in February of 87. They called me from work, says, "You got to come to work. You're going to lose your job." Okay. I'd reached a point that is kind of funny now, because there was some interesting stuff going on that month. But what had happened to me, I was completely and totally, utterly hopeless. I had absolutely no hope and no desire to keep moving on. I'd run out of gas, run out of steam, and given up. And here's what I want to tell you about the program of Al-Anon, and I give Al-Anon a hard time sometimes, and I don't know why, because they saved my life. My wife had developed a pattern: get up in the morning, going to work as she always did, on the way home in the afternoon, picking up the booze I need. I'd be sitting on the couch when she got home, or laying on the couch, whichever position I needed to be in at the time. And about halfway through that month, she decided that she was going crazy. I called my sister in a blackout. She showed up from Orlando, Florida, and they didn't know what to do with me. And I really wasn't interested in what they thought they should do with me. And I used to say I didn't ever drink and drive during that time, because if I had got picked up during that time, they told me I would got to serve out my 5 years, or start serving my 5 years, and there would be no more probation and no more second chances. But I did go through one morning where I had to physically move my sister out of the way so I could go get what I needed to get, because my wife quit picking up my stuff. And the reason she quit picking up my stuff is her and her best friend found out about this thing called Al-Anon. And I tell you what, they went to a meeting one night and came back, and my life changed. The way it changed is she no longer brought any booze home for me. I was on my own. They taught her, she caught on pretty quickly, that he can do whatever he wants to do. And that is imagine the position that puts you in, us alcoholics. I was literally drinking myself to death. I was not eating. I was physically very, very sick. I was completely hopeless. And she made a choice. Have at it. And we had two couches at that time. She'd come home from work. She'd have her couch. And I would be invisible, I guess, because there was never any discussion. She never offered to fix me something to eat like she did the day before, the week before. And I didn't know what to do with that. I do remember that part of it. I got so sick and weak that later on that month, toward the end of the month, and it happened to be one about the same day as a Saturday morning, about like this one, my two bosses showed up. And I think they had this all planned, because it was my two bosses and my sister and my wife, and they said, "We have something for you if you're interested, but something's going to change." And they explained to me about this treatment deal, and I said, okay. Because the alcohol quit working is what happened. It wasn't that I said, "Man, I need to turn my life around. I'm in a mess here. I need to go get some help and get back with the deal." I'd been drinking so long, and I was so physically sick, and I couldn't keep the stuff down. So I was not getting that relief. I was not getting that sweet blackness that had worked for me for about 3 years. It just wasn't working anymore. I could drink, and the only time I ever got any relief is I'd go into my bathroom. My wife's bathroom is over here. And I could lay down on the floor, and I could put my cheek on this tile, cold tile floor. This is in February. And that would give me some relief. And that was the only time I'd feel comfortable. And the head would be right there. And the toilet would be right there if I was to need it. and I needed it quite often. And that's the only relief I got. Anyway, I wound up going to treatment. And I ran into this guy, a counselor there, who I think is probably one of the most, if not the most important persons in my life. His name is Richard. He's not an alcoholic. Once I was physically able to get cleared up and hold my head up and walk around a little bit, he started talking to me, and he told me about this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, read this thing here, this thing called The Doctor's Opinion. And it's remarkable how quickly the body can recover, you know, the physical part of it, and somewhat the mental part. Couldn't remember anything, but could comprehend maybe a tenth of what I read and a tenth of what was said to me. But the one thing I did comprehend was the allergy and the disease that Dr. Silkworth talks about. That explained to me what had been my problem all that time. That from my first 33, 34 years of my life, that my problem was that I suffered from a disease of alcoholism, and that when I drank alcohol or put any other thing into my system, I couldn't get enough because of the, I couldn't ever get enough. When I start drinking, I wanted more, and I wanted more, and since it was working for me and it changed the way I looked at things, it worked for me. But I didn't know about the allergy, that my body processed it differently. I didn't know that this was a disease. But that gave me an instant relief. That gave me an instant relief. And in spite of that, I still, I went on through the deal, treatment, and I graduated from there successfully, and because I was a good student. I got a good education, and it was a period of time that I needed to have. I was physically, like I say, I was still sick. So I needed that period of time, and they introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. This treatment center did things right. They talked about the big book, and they talked about Alcoholics Anonymous, and they talked about the recovery was at Alcoholics Anonymous. They told me the right things. Most of the people in that, 90% of them in there, were recovering alcoholics. And I'm grateful to what they did for me and the education they gave me. I have absolutely no negative things to say about this treatment center that I happen to have the good fortune to go to. I don't think they're all like that today, but that's kind of a different deal. So I did that. I started going to AA. My wife was going to Al-Anon already. Our life was such that we would go to AA. I'd go to AA every night. And on Saturday night, we would go to speaker meeting up at our Oakwood group. And she was going to Al-Anon 2, 3, 4 times a week, regularly. I did that for about 6 months. And one Friday evening, I wound up drunk. So what I learned from that is I do have the disease of alcoholism. When I drink, the compulsion kicks in, and I have no choice but to continue to drink. I knew about AA meetings, and I talked to and listened to people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went to a lot of meetings. Nothing was changing. So going to meetings for me did not get me sober. And I used to really, really regret that period, that relapse, we'll call it. And now I'm as grateful for that period of time as anything, because what happened one Friday evening, my wife wasn't feeling good, she went to bed. I got up, walked down to the store close by, bought 2 bottles of wine. Don't like wine, never have liked wine, don't drink wine. Bought 2 bottles of wine, came back, started drinking it, and I tell you, it was within 20 minutes with that terror, that bewilderment, that frustration, that despair, that hopelessness, the loneliness, the remorse, the guilt. It was just all pervasive. It was just overwhelming. I hear people talking about when they go back out drinking, it gets a little worse, and then it gets a little worse, and it gets a little worse. It wasn't that way with me. Literally within 20 minutes of going back to that bottle, drinking that crap and stuff that I didn't even like, knowing that this was not the solution to my problem, that I could not drink successfully, knowing that on that Friday night, I did what I do as an alcoholic. This is the kind of alcoholic I am. I drank that weekend, didn't go to work Monday, didn't go Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Didn't go to work. Went, got what I needed to drink. Went to meeting that Wednesday night. Couldn't stay, was too drunk. So what I got out of that so far today is that I may have a lot of problems, and I can go to a trillion Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and I can listen to y'all for 100 million hours, and I will not stay sober very long. So I'm so grateful for that drunk I had. I'm so very grateful for that drunk, because that finally, I believe, so far, enabled me to surrender to this disease. Because what happened not too long after that, I struggled for a while, but not too long after that, I got this sponsor. I still got him today. I was introduced to this book, by Chuck Chamberlain, called A New Pair of Glasses. I had this thing called it was as close to a spiritual experience as I'll ever have over the Roundup. Functioned much like this. And it's probably in October of 89, I believe it was. And it was kind of a series of things that caused me to maybe take one more step. Because when I read in that book and heard him talk about his perception of his higher power. Because, see, I'd been to AA for a good while. I had not been drinking. I still had that illusion of the separation of God. I still could not connect. Even though I saw the God in you and the goodness in you, I couldn't seem to connect to that as far as a personal experience. So, see, I was missing the whole deal. I was missing the whole deal. But as a result of reading that, I was able to look at that third step a little differently. And the reason I believe that today is because I took a fourth step and did a fifth step with my sponsor shortly after that. I started taking the actions that this program of action talks about. And I had done something that the book talks about somewhere in that third and fourth step. I had fully conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic and that I would never be like any non-alcoholics. It talks about that delusion has to be smashed. And that was smashed. Not as a result of going to meetings, but as a result of finally giving up. Just saying, I do not know what to do. And I do not want to live this way. So I did that inventory with my sponsor. And I saw some things about me. I saw a pattern there that no matter what the situation was, no matter what the resentments, fears, sex conduct, and the harm was, there was something that was very consistent about those things. And that consistency was my reaction, my behavior, based on my selfishness and my self-centeredness. That was my selfishness, my dishonesty, my self-seeking, my fear, my inconsideration of others. No matter what the situation was, whether it's a sex deal or a resentment deal, and most times a fear deal, it was always the same. I was selfish, I was dishonest, I was inconsiderate, I was self-seeking, and I was frightened. And I hurt a lot of people. I was so wrapped up in myself and so self-absorbed, I didn't even know it. What that inventory allowed me to do was do what I think is the most important action I've ever taken in my life. That is to identify the people and the institutions that I had harmed. And to try the best I could, using the program that's outlined in our book, to go make amends to those people and those places and those institutions. Because, see, I could not look at the world through God's eyes when I still had all that guilt and that remorse. I was told, you're not going to stay sober probably unless you can go make amends to that family, that lady that you killed in that car accident. I said, how do I do that? Don't know how you do that. You just got to do it. So I wound up going up and seeing that family. They lived up in Tennessee, and I talked to the mother, and I talked to the father, and I talked to the sisters of the lady. And I told them what I was there for. I didn't talk about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't talk about anything about their daughter at first, or their sister. I told them that I was there for me. And I was there to right a wrong that I knew that I could never, ever right. I could never, ever make it right. But I was there to do whatever I could to try. And they accepted that. And we had a good conversation. I wound up making two trips up there. And you know what they wanted? When I asked them what if there was anything I could do to make this right, because that's what the book tells me to do, is to be willing to go to any lengths to stay sober and to do whatever I need to do to mend the wrongs I had done. They said no one ever told us what happened that day, and I really didn't understand what they were saying, but what they finally got through to me is I was with, this lady's name was Faye, I was the only person that was with her that whole period. No one ever said, ever told her family what happened. So I told them, and they thanked me, and they hugged me, and they told me they loved me. And the love and the forgiveness, the power of Alcoholics Anonymous at that moment was just immeasurable, because I was finally given some relief. A harm that no one could ever, ever undo was mended as best could be done. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a father I hated, and I haven't talked about him much, thank goodness. I used to talk about him a lot, and I don't know why. Because, heck, he was a pretty good guy. You know, he wasn't perfect. He had a lot of flaws, but he's a pretty good old man. He taught me some pretty good things, and I hated him because of the way I looked at things and the way I reacted to things he told me. I was given the opportunity shortly before he died to go down to Florida and sit with him as he was. I had to help. He had to be helped to get undressed so he could go to the bathroom. And I'd been down there a couple of days, and I hadn't screwed up the courage quite to face this man who's 85 years old. I was in the house in this that I hated, in this room that I hated, with this man that I hated. And I was helping him take his trousers off, and I said, Dad, I'm here for one thing, and I've had a tough time talking to you about it, but I have not been a very good son. And I had not been. I had been dishonest. I had not been much of a son for years and years. And I had done a lot of things to harm him and his family. And I said, he knew I was in recovery, and he was very happy. And I said, Dad, I'm here to try to make my amends to you because I know I've harmed you in a lot of ways. I put you through a lot of terrible things, and I had. And he looked at me and he said, Boy, I don't know what you ever think you could have done to harm me. And that's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I got relief from that. Because the man that whenever I thought of him 99% of the time, I thought something bad. Today, when I go and visit him where he's buried, he died within a few weeks after that, by the way. When I go up to visit him up in Alabama where he's buried now, and I sit there and I talk to him, or I just sit there, 99% of the time I think about something good. The love and the forgiveness of Alcoholics Anonymous makes things so much better. I had some problems at work. They pulled my security clearance. I was not promotable. I didn't know what to do. They said, Well, why don't you try to get security clearance back? I said, Well, do you know anyone that's ever done that successfully? No, we don't. I said, Okay. You know what to do. And they said, Here's a regulation. They gave me a regulation. And I sat down there one day, and I'm not much of a writer, really. And I wrote out my story, and I told them the truth. I told them about the disease. I told them the whole deal. I told them about my relapse. And I sent this package off to Fort Meade, Maryland, of all places. It's where they approved, disapproved security clearances. And they said, well, the package looks good. Got people to endorse it. And I had a period of sobriety around 3 years, I'd say, at the time, and sent it off. Didn't have a lot of hope. They sent it back. And they said, your security clearance has been reinstated. So you see what happens piece by piece, little by little. Alcoholics Anonymous has started to put me alive together and giving me the ability to start looking at things differently. I was a convicted felon. I couldn't vote. Couldn't do a lot of things. I had no rights because I was a federal felon. I said, you know, I used to vote. I used to be interested in that. What do I do about that? And they said, Well, what you do is you petition the state and you ask for a pardon. I said, Okay. So I did much the same thing I did with my security clearance. I sent it down there to Montgomery, to the Capitol, and they granted me a pardon because I told them the truth. And I told them that I had really struggled with this disease, but I had done what I could to make things as right as I could. And I asked them if they could do anything to help me. They said, sure. The love and forgiveness of Alcoholics Anonymous. Last amend I want to talk about, and there are a lot of amends. Created a lot of damage, and I had a sponsor, that helped me with those very important things. I think the amends are the key part of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think that based on my experience. I don't have any idea what your experience is. I happened to be married to this lovely woman, Gail, who's over there, and I didn't have any idea on how to be a husband. I didn't have a clue. I knew how to think about me all the time, be self-absorbed with me and worry about me and think about me and blah, blah, blah. But I had no idea on how to have a loving, caring relationship with another human being. Fortunately, she was involved in Al-Anon, and this is the way we have become a loving, caring couple. I did not go to marriage counseling. I did not work on my relationship. I have not ever worked on my relationship, and I hope I never try to work on my relationship because I don't do too good with that. I went to Alcoholics Anonymous because I didn't have anything to work on my relationship with. She went to Al-Anon. And she worked with people in Al-Anon, and I worked with people in AA. Now, what we did do, we got around sober couples in AA and Al-Anon. That's where I learned how to become a sober, caring husband who loved his wife, and not only loved his wife, but most of the time could reflect that love in my actions. Because, see, I said a lot of times I loved her, and I put her through total hell, just like I did anyone else that was around me. So what Alcoholics Anonymous gave me was the ability to make my amends to my wife, not by working on that relationship or telling her I loved her, but trying to take the actions of this program and trying to remove the guilt, the remorse, the self-pity, the fear, the resentments. So I might perhaps have a loving, caring relationship with a woman that I was married with. And it's been a neat deal. I do want to talk about one more, my mother. My mother is a wonderful lady. She was a lot younger than my old man, and my old man had actually raised my sister and I and my mother. He was in his mid-40s, and she was 21 when they got married. And so it's kind of a weird relationship there. But when I got sober, I had a mom that I didn't spend any time around. The last 15 years of my drinking and my deal, I just didn't have much time for my mother or my father. And what we do now is we spend a lot of time together. I'm able to have a friend who happens to be my mother. And we do a lot of neat things together. I've taken her on a hot air balloon ride. And I've never been closer to God than when I watched my mother on a hot air balloon ride. When she picked some leaves, reached over out of that basket and picked some autumn leaves off that tree. And saw the joy and the happiness in her. Took her to the Olympics a few weeks ago. Took my wife and my mother and a friend of my mother's to the Olympics. And gosh, what a wonderful way to live soberly is to spend time with people you love and care about and be able to show those actions because of the power of the love and the forgiveness that you people showed me. Because, see, I did those things that I talked about, and I don't know that I wanted to do any of them, but I did them because they were suggested to me from people that had done these things that were members of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I believe I have a huge debt to Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe this debt that I was able to, this grace that I was able to accept is just a wonderful gift. And the debt I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous, I can never, ever, ever begin to repay. There's just no way. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me what my job is, and it tells me what my purpose is. And it tells me that when the spiritual malady is overcome, I will get better mentally and physically. So what my experience has been that if I'm working on my spiritual malady, which is for me to try to continue to strive to grow spiritually, then I will get better both mentally and physically. And my experience has been, much like my sponsor and his sponsor, is to be totally involved and absorbed in Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys heard Gene last night and Karen this morning. And they, I can testify that they are not just talking because I watch them. They are in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. They are working with women. They are giving their time, their energy, their sweat, their love. You know, most of the time they don't get sober, people they talk with. But a lot of them do. A lot of them don't. A lot of them do. So that's what we do at the Fellowship Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm there regularly. I sponsor a lot of guys. I have a sponsor that I am in contact with frequently. I'm involved in service work. I have always been involved in service work because my sponsor and his sponsor have been involved in service work. And I've had a lot of opportunity to practice tolerance and patience in service work. And I need a lot of practice because that's not two of my better things. I'm not tolerant and I'm not very patient, but I'm a little bit better than I used to be. Sobriety provides happiness. And that's a little bit different from pleasure. Happiness is through struggling and enduring and believing and having faith in a God that can help me if I will allow him to help me. That's what happiness is, and I think that's what sobriety is. It's struggling and enduring through living life. But you know, life is not easy. Life is very difficult. We have some tragic things happen to us. And that's a given. That's going to happen. What am I going to do with those things? What am I going to do with those challenges and those heartbreaks and those fears and that unsure time? I hope that I can go to Alcoholics Anonymous and get some guidance. Because all you people have given me is a life that I never, ever could have imagined. You've given me through the power of love and forgiveness and acceptance and have taught me how to live one day at a time. The book says we are not a disciplined lot. That kind of gives us an out, unless you happen to read the next sentence. And it says that we are allowed to be disciplined through the simple practice of these 11 steps that we have just outlined, which are the first 11 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So if I am not a disciplined lot, if I am not a disciplined person, I have a series of steps that will allow me to be disciplined. So if I say, well, I'm just an alcoholic or have some kind of other crappy excuse, then that's all that is. That's just an excuse. Because we have a set of directions and a set of tools that will allow me to do anything that I want to do if I'm willing to sacrifice the time, the energy, and the effort. I can live life to its fullest as long as I keep Alcoholics Anonymous first. And I can be disciplined somewhat. Sometimes I carry that a little bit too far, I think, but we're not saints. Practice the principles in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what God's plan is for me. I don't have the slightest clue. I have some experiences that he will work in my life, and he will enable me to love him unconditionally and to do some things that I am absolutely incapable of doing if I'm willing to get some guidance and then follow up on that. Here's what I think his purpose is for me. I think it's for me to attend as many meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous as I can, to sponsor guys, to work with a sponsor, to pray, to meditate, and to continually on a daily basis surrender to my disease of alcoholism. I think that's what God's plan for me is. I think if I keep my sobriety first and keep my God that you people gave me first in my life, that I won't have to drink today. And maybe I won't have to drink tomorrow. So, I'm so grateful to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is an unimaginably powerful deal for me. And if I ever get feeling sorry for myself, all I need to do is go to an AA meeting and start talking to these newcomers. Or having these guys and gals that have been around longer than me remind me of how I used to be. And see, I won't get that unless I go and I'm an active participant of Alcoholics Anonymous. So So I don't know what's going to work for you, but I've done the best I could to tell you what I used to be like, what happened to me, and what I'm like today. And I want to thank you once again for being here. Thanks.